The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Coming up later on in the show, Sid Lowe will be joining us to talk about what has been another bonkers few days in Catalonia for Barcelona. But there really is only one place to start today, the 2020 Champions League final. PSG taking on Bayern Munich. Julian Laroche, Shaqiri Hislop and Stuart Robson with me to discuss it. Robert, there's a real sense of excitement around this, and rightly so. It's almost the same you feel as a World Cup final, because the way in which it's been all put together, I've got people reaching out for me from England who only normally watch the Premier League, the Brazilian family excited about Neymar. There are so many subplots about this game, and as a man who watches a lot of football and a lot of rubbish football at that, this should be brilliant, shouldn't it?
It should be a great game. We've got two excellent sides. We've got a team in Paris Saint-Germain that have got a great front line. If they come off, they could cause Bayern Munich all sorts of problems. We've got a Bayern Munich side that are scoring goals left, right and centre. Both have a certain style of play. They both have their own philosophies. It all depends which side have to change their philosophy, because they're forced to. And I think that's going to be PSG. They're going to have to play on the counter-attack at times, because Bayern are going to press high up the field. They're going to make it difficult for PSG to play out from the back. But if they do get opportunities to get it into Neymar and a bit of space in behind the front players, and then they get Mbappe running and Di Maria running, that could be the way they get through. But it's going to be a great game. I'm sure it is.
Shaqiri, even though it's airing during prime nap time, surely even you can stay awake for this one.
Yeah, I've set my alarm down, so we'll be all right. But yeah, this is a game, understandably, that everybody's looking forward to, not just what's going on or not going on, as the case may be, outside. Just the whole build-up to this tournament, the fact that they're all in one place, that it's a one-game elimination or has been for the last couple of rounds. And in Bayern Munich and PSG, you've got unquestionably the best two teams at this moment contesting the final. And at the same time, you've got Robert Lewandowski, who, had there been a Ballon d'Or, surely would have won it. And Neymar, who potentially... And if anything we've seen from him over the last couple of weeks is anything to go by, is the best player in world football right now. So it makes for a thrilling matchup on so many different levels.
How are you, Jules?
I'm a bit stressed. I can feel the stress level getting up and up, but I'm okay. I'm okay for now. I still sleep okay.
Jules, let's talk about this from a French perspective then, starting off, shall we? So much money has been pumped into this PSG and it's served up so much disappointment up to this level. It's not, though, do or die, is it? Because it's Bayern Munich?
It's already a progression. It's already an improvement to anything that they've been through before, because since the Qatari took over in the summer 2011, they've only done quarterfinal, and then last 16. And so already there's something positive about it. Of course, if you lose the final, you're very disappointed and you feel this is an opportunity missed. And you don't know when you will be back there again, of course. But it's already much better than anything we've seen before at the club. So on that it's a positive note. Then it's against Bayern, who have won five already, who've played 10 finals. Bayern and Germany, the rivalry in football with France is really big at club level. Let's remember the 1976 European Cup final between Munich and Saint-Etienne, for example, at Hampden Park. Or the World Cup, the Euros, where France and Germany are pretty good. So there's that narrative as well in there. Plus, it's Bayern Munich, who at times have been very critical of PSG, of the Qatar money, of the old money, and the way this team has been built and the way this club has improved in the last 9 years. So there's so much in it that I think, of course, PSG would love to win it for all those reasons. I think to prove a lot of people wrong and a lot of haters wrong. But there's also a case of this is already amazing, and this is such a progress already that, okay, if we lose it, we still have so much momentum to go forward and go there again, and this time winning it. Let's not forget, this is the first final ever in the Champions League for the club. This is the biggest game in the club's history. So they're very excited, I think, to be there. They're looking forward to it. But there's also that element of this is already very, very positive.
The criticism that we would throw at PSG, warranted as well, often would be it's too individualistic. There's no sense of team. It was interesting reading your article, Jules, over on the website, that that has changed, that there seems to be a real bond. What was the trio? What was the catalyst for this change?
So there was a big players gathering back at the end of February at Marco Verratti's Italian restaurant in Paris, the restaurant that he owns. It was on the back of some really bad result. They had lost to Dortmund away in the last 16 first leg, for example. They drew 4-4 with Amiens. They narrowly beat Bordeaux a few days before that, conceding three goals, only winning 4-3. So it was a mess. They've been criticised for the parties and the birthdays and all of that. And it was really, there was something toxic about the environment. And they said, like, listen, we need to do something. Something has to change. And that was before we knew we would go on lockdown and that the pandemic will happen, et cetera, et cetera. And I think winning against Dortmund in that second leg really brought something to that dressing room, to Tuchel as well. I think they realised there that they had to mature, and they'd mature in a way that they could also take their responsibilities and get back to a game that didn't really look on paper like they could win it, and winning it. And I think after that, during lockdown, they really got together on Zoom calls and WhatsApp, et cetera, et cetera, saying like, listen, we've got the talent. We can do something good here. We just need to be more united, have that solidarity, that togetherness, that hunger of being all together instead of being just a sum of individual talents, really. And I think Kylian Mbappe summed it up really well after the semi-final against Leipzig. He said in the press conference, me and Neymar realized that we could not do this on our own. And I think for a long time, there was a real feeling for Mbappe and Neymar, okay, this is our team and we've been bought for a lot of money to deliver the Champions League. Let's do it. Let's do it ourselves. It doesn't work like this. And I think they realized that as well. And since that, the bond, as you said, between the players, the way they've gelled has really changed everything. The dynamic at the club, the momentum for the players. And also you see on the pitch, the way they play is far more as a collective than anything we've seen before. So that's really a big change. Doesn't mean that it's going to make them win the final. And really, they only beat Atalanta and Leipzig since this new format. But I think when you've got at least that basis, it gives you a lot of strength going forward.
That's the key point in it, Robbo. As much as it's a nice story and everyone's happy and we're all holding hands and everyone's playing together, it is only been Atalanta and Leipzig.
Yeah, you've got to remember, they were going into extra time or injury time against Atalanta. They were better than Atalanta. They deserved to win the game, but they were still 1-0 down going into injury time. And then they got those two late goals. And I think that's what has bonded them. That result has made them play much, much better against Leipzig. I thought they were excellent in that game. But it's some of the other players that are going to have to play really well in this. Herrera, Paredes, are they going to go out and battle against the fullbacks of Bayern Munich? They're going to have to be the players that do the hard graft so that the likes of Mbappe and Neymar and Di Maria can go and show their talent going forward. It's some of those the lesser named players that are going to have to play at their very best in this game.
It's interesting and seeing this progression from PSG, but it's been all on Neymar inevitably because of the way that he stepped up in those two games. Shaqen was clearly the best player on the pitch in both the semi-final and the quarter-final as well, I felt. And it'd be once again, despite the presence of Kylian Mbappe and Lewandowski, you feel the responsibility of Neymar to lead this PSG team.
Yeah, I think most importantly, we saw a serious side of Neymar, a more focused side of Neymar during the course of that 90 minutes that I don't think we'd seen pretty much at this stage, at this level, since he arrived at Paris Saint-Germain. And the result followed, and the game, and they continue to get better. And I'll disagree with Julian. And right now, you've got one game to lift this trophy that you spent all this money on. I don't think you look any further down the road than Bayern Munich.
Neymar's an interesting figure, Jules, because you speak to anyone who knows anything about football and they seem to have an opinion about him. And normally it's negative. You speak to Brazilians, well, he's in it for the money. You speak to other people, he's just all about diving and rolling around. This is a massive stage, isn't it, to shut people up?
It is, and I think he did that a little bit to a certain extent in the quarterfinal or the semi-final. And I think he's a very different Neymar, certainly to the one that we've had in Paris for the last 3 years now. I think, like I said, for me, he's playing the best football of his career, even better than the best year that he had at Barcelona. He really expresses something very different than before in terms of his body attitude, his behaviour, the way that he's been talking in that team, the way he's you know, even showing some love to Paris, to the football club, to some of his teammates, which never happened before. And I think, I really think that he's far happier in his head, in his life, in the way he plays. And it's a huge game, of course. If he wins it for PSG with a similar kind of performance that he showed against Leipzig and Atalanta, you know, he will be, again, I think at the top of the game, really. Of course, Lewandowski had a great season, others too. But he would be right up there. He would be the one who delivered that Champions League and led that team, although as a collective, but still led that team to winning it finally, eventually. So it would be huge for him. I think already some people have changed their mind about it. There's much less diving. There's much less having those antics and rolling around and stuff like that. They're much less showboating, for sure. He looks far more humble than for a while, really. And I think he just needs now to almost validate it with a great performance on Sunday night and winning it.
You know, we're going to be sat here after the game, Robbo, talking about him. In what context do you think it will be?
I think he's going to be the playmaker. He's going to have to find that role in behind. I think he's going to be a withdrawn striker. That's going to be key for PSG. Playing as the withdrawn striker, because it's going to make one of the Bayern centre-halves have to come out, or make one of the Bayern midfield players drop that little bit deeper. And if he can get himself turned and wriggle away from the first challenge and then find that pass in between the lines or in between the defenders of Bayern for Mbappe's runs, maybe for Di Maria's runs, he is going to be the key player in terms of opening up Bayern Munich with his ability to go past the first challenge, then have enough time to pick out the pass. I still think PSG aren't going to win the game, so I'm not going to, sure we're going to be talking about him in glowing terms. I think he'll have a good game, but not enough to win it.
Let's take a look at the potential starting 11, Jules, starting off with PSG. Where are the big question marks going into this tie? Obviously, the goalkeeper, is Navas going to be back?
He should be back in goal, which will be a big boost, huge boost, although Sergio Rico did OK in the semi-final against Leipzig, but Keylor Navas is a level higher than that, not just with the experience of having won this competition before and many times with Real Madrid, but also by the season that he's been having, the leadership that he has in that dressing room, and also because you know who the opposition is, you know that for PSG to win it, they would need a keeper at his top, and I think for that it's huge. And then the other one is Marco Verratti. Is he fit enough to start and maybe give the team 60 minutes and then come off? Or do you keep him on the bench and see how the game evolves and then maybe bring him on for the last half hour if you need to, or 20 minutes or something like that? It's a big call for Thomas Tuchel, I think, because Herrera has done well. He's not as good technically as Verratti, but he runs a lot. He's got that grit in him. He can press well. Because of the engine that he has and the running, he's a very intelligent player too. So this could work as well, depending on the game plan that you will set the team. But I still think that, personally, I think I would risk Verratti, especially against that Bayern press. Verratti would be great for that. Even if he gives you only an hour, I think you could benefit a lot from it, and then you can bring Herrera on for the last half hour.
For the Bayern perspective, Boateng looks like he will be fit. So are there any questions, or we know the starting 11 already, Jules?
Well, you would not change a team that has won the last two games 8-2 and 3-0 in the quarterfinal of the Champions League and semi-final, I guess. That's the idea. Although you could make a few cases for Kingsley Coman, for example, starting on the left-hand side ahead of Perisic, play against his former club, against PSG, maybe he will have something to prove against them. Huge game for him. And he knows this Paris team so well. You know, he's been playing with Kimpembe between the age of 11 and 19. So I don't think there's many secrets in this PSG team for Kingsley Coman. So maybe that's an idea. And what do you do at right back? Do you keep Kimmich there? Although that means maybe not having the defensive solidity that you would have from midfield with Goretzka and Thiago, or Pavard is back, he's fit again. You could bring Pavard back at right back, move Kimmich in the centre of the midfield with Goretzka, for example, and then Kimmich will help you protect that back four probably a bit more than Thiago and Goretzka would do. And against this PSG side, as we've been mentioned, who will be very dangerous on the counter-attack, on the break, maybe Kimmich in midfield is better than Kimmich at right back. So again, a few question marks over the team, I think, for Hansi Flick between now and tomorrow night.
How tempted would you be to tinker with this team, Robbo?
I wouldn't really be tempted. You know, I agree with Jules that Kimmich is a better central midfield player and Pavard is a better right back than Kimmich, but I'm not sure he's going to be fully fit, so I think he'll stick with the same team. And Thiago's got a big job on his hands because he's going to have to, at times, go back and deal with Neymar when Neymar comes that little bit shorter. So that's the only reason that Kimmich could be placed into that midfield, to try and deal with Neymar.
Jules, final point on this before I get your predictions. Why is this such a big game for Bergnat?
Yeah, that's another narrative of this game, playing against his former club, and not just his former club, but a club that has, well, certainly Ole Gunnar has been very critical of Juan Bernat, publicly blaming him for a defeat in the Champions League before, which is not something that, I don't care how Ole Gunnar sees his job, but I'm sorry, as a CEO, a sporting director, I mean, at those top level jobs, you cannot criticise publicly a player for, well, it's Bernat's fault if we lost tonight. I think this is outrageous. So I think he will have a lot on his plate as well, trying to prove, again, a bit like Coman for different reasons. I think he saw, there's also a big narrative over Tuchel and Hansi Flick, two German managers. I think it's only the fourth time in history that the two managers have the same nationality in the Champions League or European Cup final. So it's that rare. And I think there's a battle within the battle between Flick and Tuchel back in Germany too. So many narratives, so many stories. And as Robo said at the beginning of the chat, let's just hope it's a fantastic game.
Right then, boys. Prediction time. Robo, you've already said that you think Bayern are going to win it. What's the score?
Yeah, I think Bayern will win by 2-1.
Brief. Xhaka.
Yeah, before I give my prediction, I've been on a real European roll here. I predicted Inter Milan would cruise past Sevilla in the Europa League final. So here goes. As I look at this one, post semi-final, I thought this was Bayern Munich's tournament to lose. But I thought Lyon certainly provided more trouble to Bayern Munich than the scoreline would suggest. I think PSG are a step up from that. They won't play through the midfield as Barcelona made the mistake in doing. They pin them back. The counter-attack will always be on, especially with the likes of Kylian Mbappe. Right now, I'm leaning PSG just 2-1.
Ah, the kiss of death for you, Jules. Any sort of optimism, excitement you had going into this tie.
As if you're going to ask me, as if you're wondering who I'm going to say. I'm with Xhaka. I believe everything Xhaka says anyway. As long as he doesn't jinx PSG like he jinxed Inter Milan before the Europa League final. So I hope Xhaka is right. Xhaka is always right, usually, so that should be fine.
Yeah, right. This could be one of Jules' greatest weeks ever. He could see PSG win the title, and then on Monday, Gab is on holiday as well. So it will be Jules and Robbo for the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. Be sure to download that.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It has been another eventful week, hasn't it, in Catalonia. We knew that heads would roll. Quique Setién out, Eric Abidal out, Ronald Koeman, of course, coming in. Bartomeu remains present. Questions now about who will be in the squad for the start of the new season. Messi, it looks like, will stay, but who will stay with him? Well, Julian Laurent still with us. Plus, we welcome from San Sebastian, Sid Lowe with us. Sid there for the Women's Champions League quarterfinal. Sid, let's focus though on Barcelona. Let's start with a big one. Messi, what's happening?
Well, what's happening is that Messi, obviously we know how unhappy he's been. I think as we were talking about last week, it's impossible for him not to be in a position where he would be considering his future. He had a meeting with Ronald Koeman in midweek, and according to Record radio station, he told Koeman that he doesn't see his place at Barcelona at the moment, that he feels the phrase was more out than in, but also, and I think this is very significant, significant. An awareness that it's very difficult to effectively to agree to departure now, because of course the contractual situation is such that his buyout clause is 700 million euros. No one is going to pay that. Very few people are going to pay the kind of salary that he's on for a 33-year-old, even for someone like Lionel Messi. And so the question mark now is what happens between now and the end of the coming season, which of course is when his contract would be up and he would be able to walk away as a free agent. I think there are a couple of other things that are worth thinking about here. And the most important one is, where does this story come out from? This is supposedly a private meeting between Koeman and Messi. Now, I think we can assume that Koeman knows what happened, that Messi knows what happened, and the president Bartomeu knows what happened. So why is this come out, and who has it come out from?
So, Sid, where does it come from?
Well, look, I honestly don't know the answer to that question. But I think you have to think about what is the point of this piece of information coming out. And, of course, the assumption has always been through this, that this is about Messi's decision and Messi's decision alone. But there's a bit of me that thinks that given the size of the financial hole that Barcelona need to fill, they've talked about 320 million euros loss over this COVID-19 crisis. And in any case, they had massive problems. They've got a huge amount of very, very high wage earners who are over 30. Messi, of course, is the highest of all of them. I just wonder if Barcelona are thinking to themselves, you know what, if we can engineer a scenario in which Messi does go, in which we do make some money for him, and this is the most important part of all, ensure that everybody thinks it was his decision and not ours, therefore his fault and not ours. And I just wonder if Barcelona are not as opposed to that idea as they would like people to think. And if you listen to some of the things that have been said over the last few days, I think it's surprisingly cold. I thought Koeman, although he said that he wanted Messi to be the, if you like, the cornerstone of his project, although he said that he wanted him to continue, he also said things like, I only want players at this club who want to be at this club. And the club have filtered out two or three times, well, we don't know anything about Messi leaving, but the only way he can go is if someone pays a buyout clause and he's got a contract. Now, saying he's got a contract is not the warmest way to talk about arguably the greatest player of all time.
So then, Jules, who's hovering around? Who wants Messi? Who can afford Messi?
That's two very different questions. I think everybody would want Messi, really, even at 33 years of age, even after clearly a difficult season, not so much individually because he still had great numbers and he still did great things, but certainly collectively, I think everybody would want to sign him. However, the second question on who can afford him, the answer is as obvious and as simple as the previous question. No one. No one right now can pay Messi's wages. I really don't think that anyone has, really, with financial fair play. And even if UEFA said, you know what, we want to keep Messi in Europe, we don't want any of our European clubs to lose it, it's so important to us, so we'll kind of be kind with financial fair play if you sign him, between the transfer fee, whether it's the release clause or there's an agreement to pay less because he only has 1 year less, I don't know, any sort of agreement, plus the wages, which are enormous, by far the most paid player in the world, I just really don't think that Man City can afford him, PSG can't afford him, Inter Milan can't afford him. Even if Suning comes in and pays some of the wages through the company and everything, and this would be so difficult, I really don't think and don't believe that people can afford him right now.
Sid, it's interesting you're saying that Barcelona are being quite cold with this, but this is a side, isn't it, or a board that's just obsessed with popularity amongst the fans on social media. That epitomised by the fact that Pochettino, of course, was pretty much sweeped aside when they saw the reaction. Surely losing Messi is going to be that times a million.
Yeah, and this is why I come back to the point that what's really, really important for Barcelona's board now is that any kind of departure for Leo Messi is seen as Leo Messi's fault. Now, the problem with that, and you know, this is where I kind of damage my own, if you like, theory, is that even if it is seen as Messi's decision, even if the money that comes in is significant enough for them to do something that's useful looking towards the future, they will still be blamed. Bartomeu will still be seen as the president who failed to keep Lionel Messi at the club, who failed to have Messi play out his entire career at the Camp Nou. And so I think it's enormously damaging for him anyway. And so I'm with you on this. I just, as Jules was talking about the financial side of it, who can afford him? Almost no one. And I would argue that despite the financial side of it, Barcelona can't really afford to lose him at a political level in terms of, as you rightly say, the if you like, the kind of the social fallout from this. And so I can't help but look at Messi's situation and think he's kind of stuck. I also think, and I use the word there, political, we have to look at this in the context of a president who will only be there until the 15th of March of next year or until the summer of next year. And so I think Messi in part, I think, is thinking to himself, I don't want to give this president the satisfaction of saying I'm continuing. I don't want him to try and hang this medal on himself. And we talked about this a lot over the last 18 months or so. There's a massive breakdown in the relationship between Bartomeu, between this board of directors and Leo Messi. And there's no way Messi is going to allow them to claim any kind of victory in this.
The next issue that Barcelona have is that they've got the biggest wage bill of any club in the world, Sid. And the problem is you're paying old players now who are going to be very difficult to get rid of. We heard during the week, didn't we, that in an ideal world, Barcelona would clear out the likes of Alba, Busquets, Rakitic, Vidal, Luis Suarez. But who's going to take him?
Well, this is it. And you know, it's not just who's going to take them, because obviously these are all very good players. But as you say, who's going to take them at that kind of money? And also, will these players, if you like, effectively play ball with Barcelona? Will they allow Barcelona to look for an exit for them? You know, the agent of Sergio Busquets has already said he's not going anywhere. Luis Suarez has come out in El País and basically said, I'm not going anywhere. I would happily play as a sub. At the same time, by the way, making a very clear attack on the board. He said, look, if the plan is for me not to go, then we can talk about it. But it would be important for the person who's in charge of this to come and tell me. And I think this, in a nutshell, is part of the problem as well. These players do not feel predisposed towards helping this board out because they don't trust them. They don't believe in them. They don't think they've been well treated by this board. Now, whether or not they're right is another issue, but that's the way they feel. So they're not in a position where they're thinking to themselves, well, actually, I'm going to help you out. And as you say, where do they go? What do they want to do now? These are players who are paid too much. It's a common problem, by the way, because of the shift in the market. You know, this is something that's applicable. We've talked about it in recent weeks to James Rodriguez and to Gareth Bale as well. It's a big, big problem for Barcelona because their plan is get rid of the old players, get rid of the expensive players. Go on then. It's not that easy.
No, and this is it, Jules, isn't it? Because who's going to pay those wages, especially in these financial times?
That's right. And we talked about it a bit on the show last night as well yesterday, in the sense that the best option probably for Barcelona would be to terminate the contract, pay or find an agreement with those players, because you won't pay, you know, Busquets the 3 years that you still owe him in the contract worth, what, €200,000 a week, for example. Or if you do that with Busquets and with Suarez and with Rakitic and with Alba, that's going to cost you, I don't know, an absolute fortune. So maybe find an agreement of, okay, we'll finish your contract. You can go free. We'll pay you some of the wages that you know we owed you. And then you can go free somewhere. Because I cannot believe that someone would pay some sort of money for Luis Suarez and then taking on the wages. And again, and for me, and I've said it many times, the heart of the problem is Bartomeu. The big issue with Messi is Bartomeu. If Bartomeu was to resign tonight, for example, I'm sure Messi would stay. And then maybe if another president was to come, or, you know, whatever way they would do it, I'm sure maybe some players then would be more willing to leave and say, a bit like what Piqué said, if I'm part of the problem, I'm happy to go and help the club. But like Sid said rightly, right now, no one wants to do Bartomeu any favours whatsoever, and rightly so for the way they've been treated.
Right, let's focus now on the new manager, Sid. And as I mentioned before, Pochettino, and you wrote about it a couple of weeks ago, was at one stage ahead of the line. However, Barcelona, influenced by social media and the outcry from the fans, went for Ronald Koeman, who, I think, am I out of order saying is an inferior manager?
I don't know if we can say that for sure, because, of course, you're talking about managers in certain contexts. I think in terms of, if you like, the scale and how people look at these managers, I think you're right that Pochettino is ahead of Koeman. Koeman, though, don't underestimate the significance of Koeman for Barcelona, the amount of goodwill there is towards him, the sense as well that he's someone who can maybe lead a new project. But, of course, this is a project that's incredibly difficult to see through as well. Why? Because Koeman is there because Bartomeu wants him. As I've said, from 15th of March next year, at some point, there will be presidential elections. The likely winner, although who knows for sure if he'll win, Victor Font, has already said, look, however well Koeman does, my managerial candidate is Xabi. So Koeman goes, even if he's brilliant. And so this is very difficult. And I think we have to factor this in, by the way, when we talk about Pochettino. I think it's about the pressure on the board that they didn't go for Pochettino. But I also think, and although this hasn't come out yet, and although we haven't had this confirmed yet, I suspect that in the next 6 months or so, we will discover that Pochettino was reluctant as well. Because, yeah, of course, Pochettino's thinking, well, why do I go in now, knowing that in 6 months' time, even if I do very well, I probably won't continue? Why do I carry that burden when other big jobs might become available very soon? Who knows if the Paris Saint-Germain, now that they're in the Champions League final, probably not, but the Paris Saint-Germain job might become available. Who knows if maybe the Real Madrid job becomes available in the not-too-distant future, or the Manchester United job. And so Pochettino must have looked at that and seen very significant doubts as well. And you're right. They've now got Ronald Koeman, who I think has got a huge amount of goodwill towards him. There is a sense that he has some of the qualities that Barcelona may well need. But the institutional situation could well take control of everything. You know, this will override everything else. And that is the problem. And it was laughable to hear Bartomeu come out on Monday, it was, I think. Everything happens so fast these days. And he said, we've got a sporting crisis, but we do not have an institutional crisis. No, I'm sorry, you have an institutional crisis above all else. And that's one of the key reasons why you also have a sporting crisis.
What a mess, Sid. Like, you feel like this next season for Barcelona is already a write-off and hasn't even started yet.
Yeah, and look, in footballing terms, it needn't be. And you know, there is a lesson here, or maybe a lesson, I don't know, but there's a parallel here. In 2015, after that falling out between Messi and Luis Enrique, Andoni Zubizarreta, sporting director, was sacked. Within days, Carlos Puyol, his assistant, walked out. There was a huge crisis. Bartomeu was under pressure. They were trying to push him to call elections. He said, okay, we'll call elections at the end of the season. And everyone thinks, well, that's it. At the end of the season, he goes. There's no way he survives. There's no way Luis Enrique survives. What happens? They go and win the treble, and everybody survives. And I just wonder if deep down Bartomeu is thinking, oh, you never know. And this is the thing about Bartomeu. For all the other flaws, he's a survivor. And he's partly a survivor by just kind of keeping his head down and kind of pressing on and just keeping on digging and hoping that he comes out the other side. This time, though, I just don't see it.
Luis Suarez made reference to something similar in the interview, didn't he, Jules, when he was talking about the fact that, hey, look at Real Madrid last year when they got eliminated from the Champions League. We all thought everyone was past it. There was a disaster. Yet that midfield helped them win the La Liga this year.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, there could be redemption there. And of course, they haven't become bad players overnight. But Luis Suarez doesn't look fit, for example. I think Sergio Busquets is half a second or a second slower than he used to be before. The way he sees the game, the way he passes the ball, I think you could make a case, I think, for a lot of those players now past their best, but even maybe past just below the best. And I think that's probably too late. And I don't see why what happened at Real Madrid should have an impact on what will happen in Barcelona or what's happening in Barcelona. It's good for Suarez to say, well, I can do like Modric did and have a much better season next year. Yeah, but you could also have a worse season next year. And I think this is a gamble right now that Barcelona cannot take. Yes, they need overhaul. They need to change a lot of things. And I think if you can get rid of some players, and you might not be able to get rid of all those players that we mentioned, all the over 30s, but if you can, if you have that chance, that opportunity, do it. It's a shame for Luis Suarez, who has still had a great career there. It's a shame for Busquets, who is a child of the club, etc., etc. But I think it's about time if you can sell some of them and get fresh blood in, younger player, better player, or at least certainly with better prospect and potential, then you have to do it. You cannot rely on, well, maybe they could do this again next season.
Guys, thank you very much. Thank you very much to Sid. Enjoy the match. For a lot more on what happened and where it all went wrong for Barcelona over the last few months, check out our in-depth article over on ESPN FC.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
The Spanish newspapers flying the flag proud of Sevilla and that Europa League success. Sevilla number 6 is Marca. Meanwhile, AS, very cleverly, instead of saying the Europa League, they're saying the Sevilla League because of their domination in the competition. Obviously, very different sentiments in Italy. The front page of Gazzetta. Conte, are you leaving? This is after his rather strong post-match comments. It's reiterated his unhappiness with part of what's going on behind the scenes at the club. Robbo and Jules with us. Jules, is he leaving?
I think he is leaving, Dan. After just one season at the club, very positive season, even if I think you saw from the beginning, almost from day one, the frustration that he had either with the club, with the players, for example, in many games, drop points very late by conceding goals, for example, and conceding leads. And I think frustration with, in the end, maybe the feeling from him that they should have won the league, or at least it was Juve were there for the taking, and also in this Europa League that they didn't perform in the final that the way they should have done. And again, this was probably theirs to win. So a lot of frustration. He said it was really hard for his family. It's been a hard season, a hard year. I think it certainly looked like that for him as well, that it didn't look like he enjoyed much of it. So you can understand if he wants to go, although I thought that was a project for him. They spent a lot of money to get him, for example, at the club. Beppe Marotta, who used to work with him at Juventus, I think made financial effort really to get Conte at Inter Milan. They bought the players that he wanted to play the formation that he wanted to play in, the likes of Victor Moses and Ashley Young and Romelu Lukaku, of course, also Alexis Sanchez very, very recently. And then for him to go now on his own, obviously on of his own good, his own decision, I think it's a bit disappointing though.
Yeah, Robbo, like, how easy is it for someone new to come in and take over this side, which, as Jules said, for the last 12 months, it's all about trying to keep Conte happy?
Well, Max Allegri did it, if it's going to be Max Allegri, that's the talk at the moment. Max Allegri did it when he came in at Juventus after Conte. He changed the system eventually, stuck with it for a little while, the back three, then changed it to a four. But it's going to be very difficult because Conte has changed the players a lot. Remember, Icardi was there, Perisic was there, Nainggolan was there. He got rid of a lot of players and changed the squad completely. He's got players in from the Premier League, lots of players on loan. Will they go back to their parent clubs? So whoever comes in has got a big job to do, and they're going to have to do it fairly quick. There's not going to be much of a pre-season before they start again, and they're going to have to get the formation right. They're going to have to get the players in the right frame of mind. He's going to have to get the best out of Lukaku and Martinez. So whoever comes in has got a difficult job.
What does Conte want with life, Jules? Because this pattern seems to go over and over again wherever he goes. He goes somewhere, does fine, then complains he hasn't got the backing, then he's out again. Where's he going to be happy?
It's a good question, Dan. I think he's chasing happiness, that's for sure. Even at Juventus in the best years, I think there was still something missing, whether that was better results in Europe, whether that was maybe a better relationship with people at the board, at the top, and eventually, you know, he left the club as well. And certainly there was a lot of similar patterns at Chelsea and again with Inter. It's fascinating, I think, because I still think that he's a good manager. I think there's a lot of things going for him. And yeah, of course he shouts. And of course he moans a lot. And he's really happy, as we've been saying. But I still think tactically there's a lot of good there. And it's just a shame. I don't know if it comes from some sort of anger that he has in him all the time. I really don't know. But I just think it's a shame because, again, you could see clearly him doing good stuff with this Inter Milan side. They've got money to spend. They've got the Champions League again next season. They've got that momentum, finishing second and Europa League finalist. It's a good season, especially when they were coming from. So I don't know. If that kind of project he doesn't like it, it's not good. What kind of project is he after, really, as well? You know, that's another question.
But Robbo, you like Conte. We know you do. You've said so many positive things about him in the past.
Jules is absolutely right. Just got his terminology right. I don't think he's a good manager. I think he's a brilliant coach because he doesn't seem to be able to manage the situation. He doesn't seem to be able to manage the board. He's arguing with the board all the time. He's arguing with fans. He's arguing with papers. And that's not a good manager. What he is a great tactical coach. I love watching his teams play. You could put out 11 players and not know who they are. And if you saw them play, you'd know it was Antonio Conte's side because of the formation they play, the way they get it into the front players. They're a positive side. He gets this criticism that he's a defensive coach or a negative coach. He's certainly not that. They play more forward passes than most teams do, and they get it into the front players more often than any other team. So I think he's a great tactician, but there's something wrong, as Jules alluded to, mentally, that he can't manage the club and he can't manage the players and he can't manage the ball. Brilliant coach. He's got to learn how to man-manage.
Robbo mentioned Allegri. Of course, he's heavily linked to the job, Jules. Do you think he'll take it?
Yeah, I think he will take it, of course. I mean, he has been waiting for a good project to come up, whether that was in France with PSG, in England with various clubs, back in Italy as well. We saw him arriving at Milan, we saw him arriving at Juventus, in, you know, taking over obviously someone every time and a team in a project, and I think this would be very similar. He knows there's momentum going into next season with this Inter Milan side because of what they did this season. He will change, like Robbo explained so well, a few things, but not brutally, not straight in, let's go and do my stuff and forget everything that happened before. Something that have worked well this season. You know, I think that formation worked well. They could have had better results, of course, with Conte, but there's a lot of things that have worked well for some young players like Bastoni, like Barella, like Sensi, who unfortunately was injured for a lot of the season. That was a good season from them, and you can just think they would kick on and be even better next season. So there's a lot of good things at Inter Milan right now. And I think if you're Allegri and you've had a good rest, you've got a good break, you've watched a lot of football, you've probably learned a lot about different clubs and different managers, and now you're ready to go back. And I think this is a good project for you to go back into.
And another reason why it's a good project, Robbo, is because the weakness of Juventus at the moment. We discussed it, didn't we, on Friday's show, the fact that they are looking to clear out a lot of players who are on big wages. Aaron Ramsey apparently added to that list as well. Juventus very much in a transitional time. And as we've discussed with Barcelona, the problem they're going to have, Robbo, is getting these people off their wage bill.
Yeah, and the problem is they haven't got players coming in at the moment. So you can only get rid of players if you've got lots of players coming in and you're sure of getting the signings you want and you know that you're going to improve the side. But they haven't been shown signs that they're going to do that at the moment. And some of the players that they've had at Juventus over the last couple of years, I think Pirlo's absolutely right. He's got to get rid of them. They're not going to take the club further forward. The likes of Aaron Ramsey was a bad signing in the first place. Some of the other players are getting older. Matuidi, I thought, did a really good job for a couple of years. He was right to go. Higuain is going to have to go at some point. He's not the centre forward he was of two or three years ago. So I think Juventus have got one or two, or more than one or two problems. They're a side that are very much in the transition. And if Andrea Pirlo doesn't get it right in the next month or so in the transfer market, they could struggle to win Serie A next season.
And it's reiterating what we said about Barcelona, Jules, isn't it? The market is so difficult to navigate at the moment, especially if you're trying to get rid of players on big wages.
And they tried to get rid of them last summer, for most of them, and they couldn't. And what made them think that a year on, after everything that happened, the pandemic, the financial problems of every club, that some clubs would take those same players that they could not sell a year ago, that now they will take them? I think it's going to be really hard. Good luck to them. Maybe you terminate contracts, you pay off players, and then they can go on a free whatever they want. That might be the best option, and then you sign new players. But the only thing is, Juve need to sell first to get money in, to then spend that money. Right now, they can't go and spend 60 million on Houssem Aouar, for example, who Pirlo really, really likes and would be perfect to rebuild that midfield. They cannot do it right now. They would be able to do it if they sell Douglas Costa and get a bit of money. Same with Higuain, same with Ramsey, for example. And then they can spend that money on Aouar. Right now, they can't. So it's not just getting rid of players. It's also, that's so important for them, for their own recruitment, to get players in, because the money is not there right now.
Jules and Robbo, as always, thank you very much. Keep up to date with where those players could go. Be sure to click on Transfer Talk over on the website. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Here it is then, all the predictions from the boys looking ahead to tomorrow's big game. Just 4 out of the 11 of them going for PSG, inevitably Jules. He's joined by Gab, Don, Kiss of Death from Shaq, and the majority, though, believing that it will be Bayern Munich who will be crowned 2020 Champions League winners. I tell you what, it's going to be a great match. I'm sure, like you, very much looking forward to the game. Be sure to join us tomorrow for all the reactions. Stay tuned, though, now for Extra Time with Shaka, Robbo and Jules. Welcome into Extra Time. Thank you very much for your tweets. It seems a tradition now. Every time Jules is on, we've got to be quick because he's got other things to do. You've really changed.
Oh, my God.
What do you have to
you
do this evening, Jules?
Yeah. I've got family over, so it's like, it's okay. I've got plenty of time.
I'll tell you what, it is a different Julien Laurent when the cameras are rolling. Before, how long is this going to be? Hurry up, let's get this going.
My people know. You can't tell lies like that.
Okay. If PSG wins the Champions League, do you think it will be a motivation for Mbappe and Neymar to stay at the club and do it again next season? Or, Jules, will it be a good time to leave?
No one is leaving. I mean, I will repeat it again. No one can afford them this summer anyway. So this is sorted. No one can pay whatever transfer fee PSG would put on those two players this summer, and then they would just impossible. So this summer, whether they win or not on Sunday night, that doesn't change anything. I think what would be important in case they win on Sunday would be maybe for the season after that. And I think that would certainly give PSG a lot of confidence that they can maybe renew the two deals, who, by the way, I remind everyone, expire on June 2022 for both of those players. And certainly PSG will feel like if we win the Champions League, we've got that momentum to be able to start those negotiations maybe in September, mid-September, end of September, maybe even beginning of October, and saying, okay, listen, would you pledge a bit more of your future with us? And then they can stay a bit longer at the club. But Sunday's final has no impact whatever of where either of them will be next season, because they will be in Paris for sure, 100%.
Shaka, is Messi and Suarez's friendship partly responsible for Griezmann's struggle at Barcelona? It seems as though they ignore a lot of his good runs.
No, that's ridiculous. Griezmann has struggled because he simply hasn't fit into the style that Barcelona play. It's got nothing to do with what's happening off the field and what restaurant they all go to. I mean, that for me is just simply ridiculous.
Oh. People never pass me the ball. But that was because I was rubbish. Okay, should Maguire be stripped of his captaincy, Robbo, after he was allegedly involved in a bar fight and police altercation? Did you ever play on a team where a captain was stripped of the armband for one reason or another?
Yes, I think I was on play for Arsenal when, for a little while, Kenny Sansom was stripped of the captaincy because I think he failed to turn up for the pre-season trip. And when he did turn up, I think he was worse for wear. So that was one reason that he was stripped from the captaincy. First of all, Maguire has got to be proven guilty. If he's proven guilty, yes, he's got to be stripped of the captaincy because he's let the club down, he's let himself down, he's let the fans down. So he'd probably be stripped of the captaincy because he can't be trusted when he goes away. So, yeah. He'll be stripped if he gets if it's found guilty.
Jules, do you think Chelsea will be able to get Chilwell, Havertz and Silva in the coming weeks? And how do you think they will help Chelsea for next season?
I think Chilwell will sign, no problem. For Kai Havertz, I'm a bit sceptical, not in the sense of that Chelsea don't have the funds and the money to buy him. It's been going on, it seems, for a long time. There's a lot of leaks and people are talking a lot on both sides, and I don't know, it's an interesting, I find it fascinating. I just hope for Chelsea that they can sign him because he's an incredible talent, and if you have the opportunity of signing Kai Havertz, even if you're not really sure maybe where you will play at first, go for it, because if you don't sign him now, you might never be able to sign him later in his career, so go for him for sure. And Thiago Silva is an interesting one. I think there's other clubs, plenty of clubs who have made offers for him, Fiorentina being another one, clubs in Brazil. I think even PSG are still thinking about maybe offering him another year or a 1+1 sort of contract, especially if he wins the Champions League on Sunday night. So I think this one is will be quite challenging for Chelsea, far more than Havertz and Chilwell, because Chelsea are the only club right now in for Chilwell and Havertz and ready to pay those kind of of that kind of money as well, the kind of transfers. So I would say Chilwell for sure, Havertz probably, Silva, I'm still in the balance.
How hard would you push if you're Chelsea for Thiago Silva, Robbo?
I wouldn't push that hard. Yeah, he's an excellent player. Of course, he's been brilliant at times over the course of his career, but he's now getting on, and I'm not sure that Chelsea need a centre-back who they might have to protect at times. He's still an excellent player. Next season, the season after, he might just be going down the hill slightly, so I wouldn't be too keen if I was a Chelsea supporter if they were trying to sign him, or he was going to be one of the centre-halves they're signing.
Shaka, if Man City sign Koulibaly, where do you rate their odds of winning the Premier League this season?
Well, of course, it's going to be right up there. There's no question that
they're favourites at the moment, not... Jack. You know that.
Yeah, and we discussed that previously. I don't understand that. For me, I still think Liverpool are favourite, but there's no question that City need not just one but two centre backs. So Koulibaly is a huge step in the right direction. I still think they need, at the very least, another centre back.
They got Ake as well.
Yeah, but. I still don't think that that's enough for them to catch up to Liverpool right now. I think there are other concerns. I'm reading in this morning that they're looking for a long-term replacement for Kun Aguero. I think that's another step in the right direction. As we sit right now, I still think Liverpool are our favourites, despite the improvements that City continue to make.
Jules, Angelino has been constantly linked with Barcelona over the last couple of days. Do you think he may be a better upgrade than Jordi Alba in the left-back position?
It's an interesting case because obviously, you know, at City, he didn't... I don't think he performed as well as a lot of us thought he would be after the season that he had at PSV. And he's done so much better at Leipzig, probably because when he plays as a wing-back, that helps him a lot than playing as a back four. When he would, which is what he did at City, for example. So I'm not sure that Angelino is the answer at Barcelona at left back. I think there are other choices. Even if you go and get Reguilón, for example, I know he's obviously owned by Real Madrid, but Reguilón is, for example, for me, a much better right left back than Angelino is. So Reguilón might not want to go and Real Madrid might not want to sell to Barcelona, but I still think there's better profile than Angelino for Barcelona if they're really serious in getting someone really good at left-back.
Robbo, with all the signings this transfer window, what would be Chelsea's target for the upcoming season? Will Frank find it hard to keep his job if Chelsea does not do better than the season just finished, knowing Chelsea is an impatient club?
I think he's got the goodwill of the fans. He's got the goodwill of the board. I think he will have success this season. I think they will get into the top four. I think he'll have a good blend. Once he's got all these players in, a good blend of experience and quality, young players still improving. And as I said, managers need the backing of the fans. They need the backing of the board. And I think he will get that for quite some time until it goes horribly wrong, which I don't think it will be next season.
Jules, how much talent does Hussein Aouar have? Would he be a good fit at Real Madrid?
Sorry, say that name again. I didn't catch the name. Sorry.
He made a real mess of that, Jules. Let
that
me tell you, he made a right mess
somewhere.
Of it.
Read on the screen, Jules. It's there.
No. Just tell me because I can't see the screen either.
Hussein. Hussein.
Aouar. No, I was only teasing you. You said it so well the first time. It sounded like another player that I didn't know anything about, but. Hussein Aouar at Real Madrid. Yeah, I think, listen, for me, Hussein Aouar right now would be a great signing for pretty much any club in Europe. And really, I believe that. Even for Liverpool, Manchester City, Juventus, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Hussein Aouar in the form that we've seen him playing in that Champions League against City, against Juventus, and then even against Bayern Munich, because I still think, despite the defeat, he was really good in that game. I think he will be a great signing for all those top clubs in Europe. Who will win it? Not Real Madrid, I can tell you that now, because they don't have the money to spend on him. And I don't think he's on Zidane's list priority if there was money to spend. And right now there isn't. But I think a club like Juventus, a club like Manchester City, even Liverpool, I know a lot of Liverpool fans who said to me, oh, can please tell Aouar to come to Liverpool. I think great talent, only 22 years of age, and so much room for improvement, but so much intelligence, so much skills technically. It's just fantastic. And I think I was so glad to see him at that kind of level. And I think really, the future is so bright for him wherever he goes next season.
Hussein Aouar, a man I hope Bayern Munich win now,
Jules. Oh, amazing. You see? Amazing.
Jules, which signing will be more effective? Ziyech or for Chelsea or Willian for Arsenal?
Oh, I expect big things from Ziyech, really. I think he's... What we saw at Ajax is fantastic, and I think he can reproduce that even better at Chelsea. Wherever you want to play him, wide in a front three, for example, a bit deeper in three midfield, I think he's got so much talent and so much energy as well that he will fit perfectly. The kind of football Frank Lampard wants to play at Chelsea, he will fit perfectly the Premier League and the style of football there. And I just think he's going to be fantastic for them. I've got no doubt. And I think William will be a good signing for Chelsea, for Arsenal, sorry. He would be good because he's got that experience, because it would be, I think, a really good addition to the squad. He brings something different to the wingers that they have right now. So great signing as well. But I think Ziyech is very, very exciting at Chelsea. And when you think about the Chelsea project, the team they're building, him linking up with Werner, with Pulisic, it's going to be fantastic.
Good stuff, Jules. You can go to your family meeting now. That is it. Thanks to Shaka and to Robbo. Tomorrow, it should be a cracking Champions League final. Of course, keep it on FC for everything you need to know about it.